Okay, morning everyone. Today's daf in Yevamot Daf Pei Hei. We're on Pei Dalet Amud Beis. We started yesterday the ninth parak of the Masechta. We thank the Lupin Foundation for the sponsorship. So daf will be learning Zecher Nishmas Lo Lupin Zaltzman. Mishnah over here is a review of Yevamos. If you remember, the first Tosfos of the parak explained that going over a lot of what we've seen before in the Masechta, and Tosfos says, good, that's exactly correct. The first Tosfos on the Perek, I read it yesterday, just to reiterate. He says that Derech HaTana La'acher Shapir Shalachos HaMasechta, after going through the entire body of work, all the halachos, chozer v'shono, some b'lashon katzar, goes over it again in a shorthand version, k'deishi u'musudam bi'adecha, so that we have it organized, u'shmurim b'peh v'lev, so that it's remembered both in our heart and in our mouth. So the Mishnah therefore goes through a series of scenarios, which quite frankly we've gone through before, but we get to review them again. I remember yesterday we went through the Mishnah. Together, the Mishnah is very structured, very organized. The Mishnah goes through four different categories. Category number one is where the Yavama would be permitted to her husband, but also to her Yavama. Category number two, also to her husband, permitted to her Yavama. And as Tosfos himself points out, that is by far and away the most interesting category, because even though her relationship with her husband is an Isser Lav, she's in violation of the Torah by being married to her husband, but if in the event that her husband dies, she will be a perfect candidate for Yibum. Okay, so and we don't say, Tosfos points out, the Havamina could have been very easily that how can the Torah endure such a mitzvah of Yibum? She's coming from a lav. Okay, that's the chiddush is that's the marriage was still a marriage, and therefore the mitzvah of Yibum is still available. Category number three is where she's asura to both, and category number four is where she would be mutaris to both. And then what the Mishnah did is in every one of these categories, the Mishnayos gave. The Mishnah gave four different examples. And as I pointed out yesterday, the four different examples, each one of them is a contrast to the one that's in the next case. Meaning, and if you will, like I said yesterday, Roman numeral number one, so 1A is basically the same as 2A, just the inverse. And then 2A is the same as 3A, it's just that they're both going to be prohibited. And 3A is going to be the 4A, it's just that they're going to be permitted. And that's true. In other words, you can run that through, right? Okay, 1B, 2B, 3B, 1C, 2C, etc., etc. Okay, we already went through a good part of the Gemara yesterday. We're on Pei Dalet Amud Beis. The Gemara spent some time yesterday just on that first case. The first case of the Mishnah was a Kohen Hedja Shenasos an Almana. Kohen Hedja marries an Almana, and he has a brother who's a Kohen Gadol. So again, that's an illustration where she's permitted to her husband, but she'll be prohibited to her brother-in-law. Some of the questions the Gemara dealt with yesterday. Why mention Nisun? Why did the case have to get to the point of marriage? The second stage of marriage, it could have just simply said Kiddushin. Okay, the Gemara answered up that question. Another question the Gemara dealt with yesterday, why Amana? Right? Why does the Mishnah have to say that he married an Amana? Couldn't the Mishnah just simply say he married a Besula, and then he dies, and as a result of his death, his wife now is an Amana? Why did the Mishnah mention that case? And again, the Gemara answered up that question as well. Okay, we're going to pick it up right where we left off yesterday. Maskev l'Rav Papa. Okay. We find ourselves on Pei Dalet Amud Beis. We're towards the top of the Amud, about 10 lines from the top of the Amud. First words in the lines, Mishum Hachik Tani Amana. And the Gemara continues now, Maskev l'Rav Papa. Rav Papa asks the following question. I'm Rav Yochanan. You remember we quoted Rav Yochanan. This was just not that long ago, short number of days ago in the Daf. On Daf Ayin Ches, we had the following discussion. We know the Torah says that an Egyptian convert is again a full Jew with all rights and privileges of being a Jew, but the only exception is that there's an Isser Kahal. You're not allowed to marry a member of the congregation. Okay, which is most of the Jewish people. Fine. So who are they going to marry? So they're going to marry another convert or some other soul. Okay. What did we learn yesterday? We know, what did we learn back then? That in order to become mutter, so you need to get to the third generation. How do you get to the third generation? So you get to the third generation. Remember Minyamin? We quoted him a couple of times in the Gemara. So he was an Egyptian convert. So his course of action was, he'll marry a first generation Egyptian. Their child will be second generation. He'll make sure to marry off his son to another second generation. And so that way, their grandchild will be a third generation Egyptian, and that'll be fine. Now, We discussed two versions of Rav Yochanan. What if a second generation marries a first generation? What results from that? So if you remember, the Gemara is going to go over it right now. Mitzvah Shenis Shenasa, Mitzvah Rishona. So let's have a second generation marry a first generation. He's a second generation, and she's a first generation. So Benah Sheni. So what is the child? So according to one version of Rav Yochanan, which the Gemara now is going to work along with, is that the child is going to be a Sheni. Meaning mom will determine what the status of the child is. So if that's true, listening on me, Mitzri Sheni Shenasa Shnei Mitzriyos. So then, what our Mishnah did is miss a golden opportunity. Again, what is our Mishnah looking for? Our Mishnah is looking for a scenario in which you can have an Issa to the husband, but a Heter to the Yavam, an Issa to the Yavam, but a Heter to the husband, an Issa to both, and a Heter to both. Okay? And our Mishnah came up with four cases. Okay. Now, you know where this is going. And that is the Mishnah's list exhaustive?
Right.
Okay, maybe it's not exhaustive. But right now, we don't know that. So let's assume right now that the Mishnah's list is exhaustive. And so let's ask. We can construct a very nice case where we'll go through all four different permutations with the Egyptian. And the Gemara spells it out. How would that work out? Listening on me. So let the Mishnah do the following. Your Egyptian convert, who himself is a second generation, marries two Egyptian converts. Achas Rishon v'achas Shnia. One's a first generation Egyptian convert, and the other one's a second generation Egyptian convert. Vayula banim mirishon v'shnia. And now he has children. Okay, so good. So what are his children? So one child, they're going to be brothers, obviously, same father. And one's the second and one's the third. Great. Enosif kiyar chayu. So the Gemara says, now, if everybody marries who they're supposed to marry, right, kiyar chayu, what does that mean? Everyone marries who they're supposed to marry. Look at Rashi. Shlishi nasa Yisraelis. So let's say the third generation marries the Yisraelis, which he's totally entitled to marry. Because again, dor shlishi, when you get to third generation, you can marry kahal. Visheni mitzvah shnia. And the second generation Egyptian marries another second generation Egyptian. So that would be great. That would be a satisfaction of the first category, muteres labal leim v'asuros leiv mehem. That would be a case where permitted to her husband, but prohibited to her brother-in-law. Good. And e-epoch. And let's go in the reverse order. Let's say our third generation Egyptian married a second generation. And our second generation married illicitly a Yisraelis. So then that would be great. Don't quote me out of context. It's not great. But that would be then a satisfaction. Next clause of the Mishnah. V'i'epach nasiv, so mutar sliv mein vasus l'ba'alehem. So that would be a case where she would be prohibited to her husband but permitted to her brother-in-law. Because her brother-in-law is a third generation Egyptian. Mutar sleilu v'le'elu gyaris. Now what about somebody being permitted to both? A convert. Convert would be permitted to both. Convert can marry a second and a third generation Egyptian. And Asur say Lala Elu Islandist. And who would be prohibited to both? An Islandist would be prohibited to both. An Islandist would be prohibited to the second generation. And she would also be prohibited to the third as the Yavama, because there's no mitzvah of Yibam with an Islandist. Okay. Good. So what do we have right now? We have what seemingly would be a golden opportunity to include another list. So we would have now 1E, right? We have 1A, B, C, and D. So now we can have a 1E, a 2E, a 3E, and a 4E. And the Mishnah missed such a wonderful opportunity, right? So the Gemara says, no, Tana V'Shayer. Gemara says, no, it didn't. Mishnah missed no such opportunity. The Mishnah is not exhaustive. The Mishnah was just giving a series of examples, but it wasn't giving an exhaustive list. And yes, if we were creative, like the Gemara just did, we can come up with other cases that would fit into the Mishnah. So the Gemara says, Maishai Dehai Shai. Now you know how this works. Every time the Gemara makes the argument that the Mishnah's list is not exhaustive, it cannot be just but one exclusion. One exclusion is not exclusion. That means that deliberately that was left off the list. What you have to demonstrate is that there are other other cases as well that were left off the list in order to make this argument that the Mishnah's listing is simply not exhaustive. So the Gemara says, Maishai Dahai Shai Shai Ptsua Daka. So the Gemara says, okay, well, maybe what the Mishnah left out was Ptsua Daka. Okay, Ptsua Daka, how did the Mishnah leave that off? So as Rashi points out, Ptsua Daka could have been plugged into any of these cases. Take a look at the Rashi Shir Ptsua Daka. Let's say our Ptsua Daka married a Jew. Asur labala umuteris liyavama kasher. So now, obviously, she's prohibited to her husband, right? Ptsua Daka lo yavah bakal. But assuming that her brother-in-law is not a Ptsua Daka, so that'd be fine. So that would be a satisfaction of case number one of. No, I'm sorry. That would be number two. Va'akasha shenasek sher v'yesh lach ptsua daka asur leivam umutar sabala. Okay, and if let's say the husband married her and he was fine, and the brother was a ptsua daka, so that would be a case of muteris to her husband, but asur to the avam. I don't know why Rashi went out of order. Anyway. Ptsua daka shenasi Yisraelis v'yesh lo ach ptsua daka. Let's say both brothers were ptsua daka. Okay, that's some family. But both brothers are ptsua daka. So then asur labalu liyavam, and giyaris muter sazel azen. A giyaris is allowed to marry a ptsua daka because again the iser of a ptsua daka is lo yavo bekal. And a Giyaris is not considered a Kal, so therefore the Ptsua Daka is allowed to marry Giyaris. So again, so we have a case of Ptsua Daka which could have easily plugged in to all four cases of the Mishnah, and that wasn't written in the Mishnah. Gemara says, that's not a compelling argument. Imishum Ptsua Daka lav shiura dehatan lechayve lavin. So the Gemara says, you know why Ptsua Daka was left out of our Mishnah? That wasn't just a Tana Vishayer. Ptsua Daka actually is included in the Mishnah. How do you make that argument? It was included in the Mishnah because, look, the Mishnah is giving us prototypes, like models, if you will. Like, we're going to give you an example of a lav, and this would not only cover this lav, it would cover all lavin. So the Mishnah gave the example of chayve lavin, all right, mamzer, right, chayve lavin. So what the Mishnah really means is, Mishnah doesn't mean mamzer, really the Mishnah means all chayve lavin. So the Gemara says, "Atu chayv alav emilo ketani v'hadu tani." So the Gemara says, "Wait a second. The Mishnah only gives if the Mishnah only gave one chayv alavin, I'll buy into this argument." But the Mishnah doesn't give one chayv alavin. The Mishnah gives multiple examples of chayv alavin. V'haketani kohen hedger shenasa amana v'chalal shenasa k'shera. So the Gemara says, look at the case the Mishnah gave. A kohen hedger married to an amana, that's a chayv alavin. Chalal shenasa k'shera. A chalal kohen marrying a k'shera. So the Gemara says, why did the Mishnah give that example? If all the Mishnah needed to do is give one set of chayv elavin, and that would have covered all chayv elavin. The Gemara says no. How it's the rechlei la'ashmi inan kidra v'yuda amarav. The amar v'yuda amarav lo izorok sheres l'nasa l'psulim. So the Gemara says no. You know why the Mishnah gave us that case? The Mishnah gave us that case because Mishnah wanted to teach us that a chalal is allowed to marry a kshera. Stay tuned, I'm going to explain what that means a lot better in just a moment. But the reason why the Mishnah gave us that case is to tell us that a halal, a kohen who's a halal, is allowed to marry a bas kohen. Again, I'll come back to that in just a moment. V'aktani halal shenasek sher v'yisrael shenasek bas yisrael v'yesh lavach mamzer. So the Gemara says, okay, but what about the Mishnah that speaks to the case of a halal marrying a kshera? And Yisrael shenasa b'yisrael v'yishlach mamzer. The brother's a mamzer. That's another example of a lav. Hanami lo mehader misnahi. The Gemara says that's not repetitive. That case is not a repetitive case. The ashmiinan la she'ein shava b'kol v'kamash malan la v'shava b'kol. So the Gemara says because look, our Mishnah is giving us categories. Here's the category of a lav that is universal, applies to everybody. And then our Mishnah gives us a case of a lav that's not universal, that only applies to Kohanim. So again, what the Gemara is now trying to argue is that the Mishnah is not just Tana Vishayer. It's not, the Mishnah is not leaving over any cases. The Mishnah is just giving us model cases. Here's a law that's universal. Here's a law that's not universal. So Tani Yisrael Shanasa Mamzeres V'Yesh La'ach Yisrael. So the Gemara says, but again, it's hard to make that argument because the Mishnah then goes over another case: a Yisrael married to a Mamzeres, and his brother is a Yisrael. Again, the case over there was a surah to both. So the Gemara says, finally, the Gemara concedes that Lav Shmamina Tana V'Shayer Shmamina. You're right. The Gemara finally concedes. There are many cases in the Mishnah of lav and a lav and a lav. Clearly, the Mishnah was not meant to be an exhaustive list, and the Gemara finally concedes. You're right. The Mishnah's list is not exhaustive. Okay. And the Egyptian case could in fact work in the Mishnah, and it's not Akasha and Rav Yochanan. Very good. Okay. The Gemara in this little give and take that we just had, the Gemara said that a halal is allowed to marry a kshera. And the Gemara is now going to spend some time discussing this idea that a halal is not allowed to marry a kshera. Let's go over, before we start this upcoming Gemara, let's go over what we know. We know that if a woman becomes a halala, she is prohibited to marry a kohen. What is a halala? So a halala means that she comes as a result of an iser. Iser kahuna. Okay, so in other words, if a kohen marries a grusha, for example, their child is a halala. Okay, the word halala means actually halal, meaning she does not have kedushas kahuna. And therefore, she is prohibited to marry a kohen. What if they have a son? What becomes of the son? Son's a halal. Okay. And that means, like the word indicates, he's halal. Right? And in other words, halal actually means halal. Halal. It's one of those words where the Lashon HaKodesh and the English, they sound very similar to one another. Basically means the same thing. He's devoid of his Kedushas Kahuna. Okay. The Torah tells us that a halal is not allowed to marry a kohen. That's an Isser Torah. That's clear. Whatever, let's go the other way. Can a halal... Meaning, again, what is he? He's a product of a union that's prohibited. Mom and dad were prohibited to one another on a kohen level, right? Because of kahuna. And they, nevertheless, they got married. Nevertheless, they yielded a child, and this child happens to be a son. So he's a halal. As such, he does not have kedushas kahuna. He doesn't get called up for the first aliyah. He doesn't get truma. He doesn't do the avoda. Okay. That part's clear. Can he, the halal, marry a woman? Unquestionably so. Let's go one step further. Can he, the halal, marry a bas kohen?
Why not?
Right. Good. That's a good reaction. So why not? Meaning, Torah doesn't prohibit it. So this is what the Gemara now is going to discuss. Okay, this issue of whether or not a halal can marry a bas kohen. So Guf Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav Lo Huzeruk Sheros Linasi Lepsulim. So Rav Yehuda quotes in the name of Rav that there is no azhara. There is no warning in the Torah. Meaning, the Torah does not prohibit a kshera to marry a halal. Okay, lema lemesayela. Good. So after the Gemara has quoted the statement of Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, the Gemara goes back to our Mishnah, and the Gemara says, you know, I think the Mishnah makes this very point. Meaning, the Torah never prohibits it, so if all we had was just the Torah, would not seem to be usur. Although, by the way, it goes without saying, what is the child of such a union? The child of such a union would be a halal. Meaning that the psul would be passed on to the child. So it is interesting that you are sanctioning a marriage where the lack of kahuna then is going to get translated over to the next generation. But still, the Torah doesn't prohibit it. And if you look at our Mishnah seems to endorse it as well. Because the Mishnah says, the Gemara is going to quote, Chalal Shanasa Kshera. The Mishnah describes a scenario. This is in the Mishnah 1b. Right, this is the first series of cases where woman is permitted to her husband, but will be prohibited to her yavama. I should say her yavam. Right. So the case of the Mishnah is this 1b, chala marrying a kshera. Okay, so it's clear what he is. He's a halal, a kohen halal, and he marries somebody who is fit, and yeshlo ach kasher. And he's got a perfectly legitimate brother. Okay. Sounds pretty clear. So the Gemara says, chalal. I'm sorry. Lema mesele chalal shenasek shera. So my love kohanos aru yalo. So the Gemara says, first of all, the woman in question is a kohanos, right? In other words, she's a bas kohen. And umay kshera, kshera lekahuna. And kshera means that she's kshera lekahuna. And the Mishnah, by saying that, putting this in category 1A means that this halal is perfectly allowed to marry her. So the Gemara says, lo Yisraeli. So the Gemara says, no, it deflects. Maybe the Mishnah, when describing her, she's not a bas kohen, she's rather Yisraeli. Umay kshera, kshera lekahal. And all kshera means is that she's allowed to marry a member of the Jewish people. Maybe that's what the Mishnah means. Yihachi yesh lach kasher nami kasher lekal. So the Gemara says, no, wait a second. Remember in the Mishnah we described his brother. How did we describe his brother? Ach kasher. Now what does that mean? So kasher lekal. So if you're going to explain that she, her status of kshera means because she's kshera lekal, so now you want to explain that the brother's kasher lekal, mechlal du pasul lekal. And then by extension that would mean, what about the original husband? He's pasul lekal? So the Gemara says, it can't possibly be. Elalav, again, because the whole point of the Mishnah is that she was allowed to marry her husband. Her husband clearly had to have been somebody who's fit lakal. So Elalav Kohen, Umidehu Kohen, he Kohenes. So the Gemara says, okay, so it must be that the brother's a Kohen, the original husband's a Kohen, and the Gemara therefore assumes, okay, now if he's a Kohen, and if the brother's a Kohen, which is obvious, meaning they're sharing the same father, but then she, by extension, has to be a Kohenes as well, a Bas Kohen. So the Gemara says, Midir Yaak, Hakadisa. So the Gemara says, look, if all I have is a Mishnah to work with, the Mishnah is simply not compelling. You're right. Could be that the Mishnah over here was describing the Chalal marrying the Kshera and the Kshera being a Bas Kohen. It could be, but there's nothing compelling. It could just simply be that the Kshera means that she's fit to, she's a Yisraelis, Mutalav Abakal. Okay, so from the Mishnah itself, we do not have a clear indication. The Gemara is going to quote a brisa. Mesiv Raven Bar Nachman Lo Yikachu Lo Yikachu. It says twice in the Torah Lo Yikachu. Right, Rashi quotes. no, Rashi doesn't quote the pasuk. Anyway, when the Torah describes the prohibition of a kohen marrying a chalala, it says it twice. Lo Yikachu. So what does it come to teach us? It teaches us that the woman is just as prohibited as the man. Okay, period. Adkan divrei habraisa. Okay. At this point, what the Gemara is thinking is as follows. Look, on one hand, the Torah says that a kohen can't marry a chalala. It says lo yikachu twice. What does that teach us? So what the Gemara now is going to suggest is that, what the Gemara is suggesting is that just like a kohen can't marry a chalala, a chalal can't marry a bas kohen. That's what the Gemara... Huh?
Bas kohen can't marry a chalala.
Just like a Kohen cannot marry Chalala, so too a Chalal can't marry a Bas Kohen. Okay, that right now that's what the Gemara thinks is a pshat. Amar Rava, Rava says no, that's not the pshat. Kol hecha dehu muzar, he muzeris. V'chol hecha dehu lo muzar, he lo muzeris. Right, or lo mizdahara. So the Gemara says, no, you know what the pshat is? You know why it says lo yikachu twice? It means as follows. Look, there's a marriage which is prohibited for kohanim. Kohanim are not allowed to marry chalalim, or chalala. Right? Let's use the feminine, just to make it clear. Good. And you know what the Torah is teaching us by saying lo yikachu twice? There's one prohibition for him. He's not allowed to marry her. And there's another prohibition for her, meaning she's not allowed to marry him. The Torah says, lo yikachu twice, to teach me that there's an isser on both of them. And they both violate the Torah in engaging in such a marriage. Gemara says, what? That's really? That's the source? Gemara says, what are you talking about? The fact that women are prohibited in Isuri Torah, That's not a special limud over here. That's a universal rule. The Gemara in Kedushin tells us, the Gemara over here is quoting it, the Gemara in Kedushin tells us that whenever you have a lav in the Torah, negative prohibition in the Torah, that men and women are bound to the same negative prohibition. So if there's a prohibition that a Kohen cannot marry a Chalala, so it's not just going on the Kohen, it's also going on the Chalala as well. Why in the world would I need a special prohibition to teach me that the woman involved in the marriage is also prohibited? We knew that. If the Torah is prohibiting the union, obviously the Torah is prohibiting both the man and the woman within this union. Gemara says, no. So the Gemara says, no. Look, you're right. When it comes to universal lavin, so that men and women are equal. Men and women are just as prohibited in universal lavin. But we're not talking about universal lavin. We're talking about lavin that are specific and exclusive only to Kohanim. And I might have thought, without the special limud, that maybe the Kohen can't marry the Chalala, but the Issur is only on him and not on her. So the Gemara says, Vare Tuma, Tapa Pehei Amad Aleph. Wait a second, says the Gemara. Let's talk about a non-universal lav. Like Tumah, for example, a Kohen cannot become Tameh, cannot expose himself to Tumas Mace. Okay? Even Bizmanenu, even without a base of Mikdash, still Kohanim. And even though everybody's Tameh, but still Kohanim try their best not to come into contact with Tumas Mace. Right, it's a lav in the Torah. So very tumah the lav shein shava bechol the time of the kasher rechman ben Aaron v'lo benos Aaron. Now we know that this prohibition of tumas mace is only specific to men, to male kohanim, not female kohanim. Meaning, any bas kohen is allowed to go into a cemetery, is allowed to attend a funeral. In other words, there is no prohibition of tumas mace when it comes to the female kohanim, only to the male. Why? So the Gemara says, do you know why? It's a drasha. Gemara says, "Daber b'nei Aaron v'lo b'nos Aaron." It's a drasha. Now, had it not been for the drasha, what would have been the default position? The default position is that she would have been just as subject to the iser as to the lav as he would. Didn't you just make the argument that if it's not a universal lav, so then we wouldn't necessarily say that they're equal? But it's not true. Here, it's not a universal lav, and the default position is that they're equal. Halav hachi hava mina nashim chayavos. My time alav mishum derav Yudam Arav. So the Gemara says, and why? Because of the statement derav Yudam Arav. Meaning that when it comes to lav in the Torah, men and women are equal. And it doesn't matter if it's a universal lav, and it doesn't matter if it is a specific lav to that of Kohanim. So the Gemara says, lo, degamina milo yikachu. So the Gemara says, no. How do I know that women would have been subject to Tumah? I would have known it from the double Lashon of Lo Yikachu. Meaning, it's not because of Rabbi Yehuda Amarav's very generic men and women are equal to Lavin. No, that's specific to universal Lavin. But when it comes to the Lavin of Kohanim, that is a special drasha. That's the drasha of Lo Yikachu, Lo Yikachu. And that's why I would have thought that men and women, Kohanim, are equal. They're equal when it comes to the Isser of a Kohen marrying a Chalala, meaning there's an Isser on him and there's an Isser on her. And that's why I might have thought that there also should be equal as it relates to Tumah as well. And that's why I need a special drasha to tell me that by Tumah, they're not equal. Yeah, Danny.
If she would have married a regular Yisrael, she would have lost her Kohuna status,
Okay. She doesn't. Well, first of all, that's not true. In other words, she doesn't lose her kohuna status. She can't eat truma as married to Yisrael, but she doesn't lose her kohuna status. In fact, right? Let's If the husband dies and she doesn't have a child and nothing connects her to the husband, she goes back and she eats the truma again. So she doesn't lose her status. But a chalala, I'm sorry, a woman who is married to a kohen and the prohibition is a kahuna prohibition, she will lose her halala status. Sorry. She will lose her Kohen status. Okay. Igid Da'amri, the Gemara is going to go over basically the same point, just a slightly different perspective. But again, so the Gemara says that, no, really, when it comes to men and women, so they are equal with one another. Meaning that when it comes to the lav, all lav in the Torah, like Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav says, if it applies to men, it applies to women. That's across the board. And the same thing also would be true as it relates to Kohanim as well. Right? That generally speaking, men and women are going to be equal for Lavan, even as it relates to Kohanim. But here's what I might have thought. I might have thought that a Kohen can't marry a Chalala, and that's an Issur in the Torah. But the Issur is only on the Kohen, not on her. Why would I have thought that? Because of Tumah. Because we know that when it comes to Tumah, only the Kohen men are subject to the Issur of Tumah, but not Kohen women. So you see that the Torah segregates men and women as it relates to the Issur Tumah. I might have thought the Havamina would have been, the same thing would be true regarding the marriage of a Kohen to a Chalala, that the Issur is only on him, but not on her. So Kamash Malan. That's the Chiddush, that the Issur applies to both him and her. Okay, so again, where we stand right now is that, and that all was a tangent, but again, we go back to the original statement of Rav Yehuda Merav, which is that a halal is a Kohen, deriving from a marriage which when the mom and dad were prohibited to each other through an Isser Kahuna, meaning dad married a Grusha, dad married a Halala, dad married a Zona. The resulting child is going to be, if it's a female Halala, if it's a male Halal. Fine. And again, they're devoid of the Kedushas Kahuna. The Halala cannot, the daughter cannot marry a Kohen. That's an Isser Torah. Can the Halal marry a Bas Kohen? So again, Rav Yehuda Merav says, yes, he can. Okay. Rav Papa Rav Huna Berei Rav Yeshua Iklalu Lehintzavu La'asvei Rav Idi Bar Avin. Gemara finishes up this discussion with an episode. Rav Papa and Rav Huna visit the town of Hintzavu, the community of Rav Idi Bar Avin. Ba'al Minayu, they ask the following question from him, from them, I should say. Who's Eruk Shiris Le'nasa L'Psulam Alom? Question is, can a halal marry a kshera, meaning a bas kohen? Yes or no? So I'm a little Rav Papa Tinisur. So Rav Papa says, I know the answer. Mishnah Kedushin. Right? How many times have we covered the fourth parak of Kedushin? A tremendous amount of overlap. So the Gemara says, "So yuchzin alu mibavo." So the Mishnah, the first Mishnah in the fourth parak of Kedushin, there are 10 categories of people who came from Bavel. And they are, and we're going to break them up into three groupings. Kohanim, Levim, V'Yisraelim. So grouping number one is Kohen Levi Yisrael. Okay, they are perfectly kosher. Again, Kohen Levi obviously has more rights and privileges, but you're perfectly kosher. Then category number two, Chalal, Gerim, V'Charurim. Chalal, Gerim, V'Charurim. So they are one level lower in terms of status. Okay, a halal is what we've been discussing, convert, and a charurim, that's an emancipated slave. And then, so if you will, not neutral, but not a real, not a bona fide psul, not like category C. What's category C? Mamzer nesin shesuki v'asufi. So category C is mamzer nesin shesuki v'asufi. So there are psulim. Mamzer, obviously we know nesinim. We spent a lot of time in the previous parak talking about the givonim, who was sanctioned by Moshe. Let's see if I can get this right. Moshe followed by Yoshua, followed by David Hamelech. Right, all three of them sanctioned against the givonim, against the nesinim. Shesuki of Vasufi, those are two different categories of people where they are not sure who their father is. Okay, again, these are now the three different categories. 10 in total, broken up into three, three, and four. Now, Kohanim Levim V'Yisrael Mutarim Levo B'Zeh B'Zeh. So obviously, as within category A, so they can marry within one another. Pasha. Then, Levim, Yisraelim, Chalalim, Gerim, Charumim, Mutarim, Levo, Zeh, Bezeh. You can have cross-pollinization, thank you, between category A and category B, except for Kohen, right? Phil, you got that right away. Except for Kohen. Meaning, so you want A and B can get together, marry one another, except Kohanim, not including that list. So, Mutarim, Levo, Zeh, Bezeh. And then you can also have cross-pollination between B and C. Okay, anyone in category B can marry somebody from category C. Okay, and obviously, the
really, bit. Mamzer.
What happened? What just happened?
You get Mamzer in category C. You're saying that it could cross pollinate with category B?
Right. Now, that's not. It's not universally accepted, but the Mishnah, the first Mishnah in Kedushin, maintains that position. Right, but that is debatable. Okay, what we have now, and obviously the basic point of that Mishnah is like A and C are for sure. Like, right, there could be no. There's no heter for anyone from A to marry anyone from C. But anyway, but the Gemara over here is making a much more specific point, and that is v'ilu kohanis l'chala lo ketani. Look, when describing how there could be cross-pollinization from group A to group B, clearly and deliberately, kohanim were left off that list. So why were kohanim left off that list? So what the Gemara now would like to argue is that kohanim were left off that list because if either one of them is a halal, meaning if she's a halala, she can't marry a kohen. But what the Gemara wants to now argue is that the same thing is true if it was the reverse. If he was a halal and she was a bas kohen, that would also be prohibited as well. That's what the Mishnah Kedushin is trying to teach us. So Amalei Rav Huna Bereid Rav Yeshua Kol Hecha Dahani Nasve Mahani Vahani Nasve Mahani Ketani. So the Gemara says no. Don't walk away with that conclusion. What the Mishnah Kedushin was just simply saying is that from a category standpoint, we're entertaining a categorically where this could marry this. But Kohen came into Ilu by limits of Chalal Asirile Lo Ketani. But you see, as it relates to Kohen and Chalal, if the Kohen is a male and the Chalal is a female, otherwise known as a Chalala, so they're prohibited from marrying one another. That the Torah prohibits. That's the only reason why the Mishnah Kedushin didn't put the Kohen in that cross-pollinization. Only because of that scenario. You're right. Had it been reversed, had he be the Chalal and she be the Bas Kohen, that'd be okay. Why did the Mishnah Kedushin mention that? Because the Mishnah Kedushin is just talking categorically. Categorically, it's not true that always a halal and a kohen can get together one with another. And because there are some cases where they are excluded, that's the only reason why it wasn't in that Mishnah. So Asirulei, Lokatani. Asal Kamid Ravidi Baravin. So they go to in front of Ravidi Baravin. Now again, the discussion is, can a halal marry a bas kohen? So, if you could just picture the scene, they're in the Beis Medrash, they're going back and forth, right? A lot of give, a lot of take, and Ravi Debarvin, it's his community. Amar Lahu, what does he say? Dardiki. Dardiki is not the most complimentary of terms, right? It means like you're young, you're inexperienced. Meaning, what are you doing? You're having a discussion of whether Chalal can marry Bas Kohen. So he quotes Rav Yehuda Merav. It's not a problem. It's mutter. And you're allowed to. Okay, and let's move on. Meaning, I'm happy you're learning the Mishnah. I'm happy you're quoting the Mishnah. You're making a deek in the Mishnah. That's all wonderful. The halach is, it's fine. Okay, let's end the discussion. Hedy, he's like right up your alley. Okay, good. And by the way, that's a halacha. The halacha is that a halal is allowed to marry a bas kohen. Okay. Shnias midivrei sofer. We are now...
But if he does, she becomes a halal herself.
She will become a halal.
And if she does, she could never go back to being truma, right? Even if there are no kids.
And the children will be halalim as well. Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's put it this way. We know a lot of kohen families who don't have... You know, who are one point in time, right? I'm sure you know a couple of Kohens who are not Kohanim, right? In our day and age. Okay, so at one point, either they just took on the name Kohen, or another possible explanation is that at one point or another, there was a marriage, there was a halal, and they lost the Kedushas Kohuna.
What do you do with Ichu, the two?
Hmm?
What do you do with the two? Kichu, the two?
So no, the lo yikachu, that's no. All right. So the double lo yikachu is just teaching me that in the case of kohen and chalala, he's prohibited and she's prohibited, but not the reverse scenario. It was just a special halacha to tell me that there's an issur both on him and on her. That's what the double lashon. Okay, she is medivrei sofrim. Okay, let's go on. The Mishnah then what talked about. The penalty, the punitive fine that is incurred by the woman who's involved in a prohibited relationship. Okay, now this, remember in the Mishnah yesterday, we described what happens if a woman is involved in a marriage that's prohibited, she should not have been involved in, which obviously means that the husband himself also should not have been involved in. In other words, it takes two to marry. So obviously, they both were engaged in a prohibition, but the Mishnah talks about the punitive damages that she has to suffer as a result of the marriage. She loses, just to review the Mishnah, four things: her ksuva, her peros, her mizonos, and her belows. And again, just quickly to recap, what they are: ksuva is in addition to the termination settlement payment that she receives, which is generally how we view the ksuva, but also tzon barzel. She loses her tzon barzel, right? A dowry that she writes over to him at the origination of the marriage, and they write into the ksuva. She doesn't get it at the end of her marriage. Peros, meaning nechse maluk property, where he's entitled to the peros, but not if it's an illicit marriage, and she's not going to get reimbursed for any of the peros that he eats, even though he was not entitled to it. Three, mizonos. She's not entitled to be supported, meaning food and clothing, by her husband. And as Rashi pointed out back in the Mishnah, even if he were to go away on a trip, leaving her with no food, giving her, generally the wife has the ability to borrow money in terms of getting fed. And then when the husband comes home, he will be obligated to reimburse and pay those account receivables. Or I should say, rather, account payables. So, but nevertheless, because she was involved in an illicit relationship, so she's going to be on the hook to pay those IOU notes. Okay, and belows. And again, I just quoted Rashi yesterday. I'm going to quote Rashi again today, and that is that the wardrobe that she goes into the marriage with, and she writes the wardrobe into the ksuva. She doesn't even get to take home her wardrobe. Okay. Yeah, and we pointed out yesterday, and it's and the Gemara is going to discuss it today, and that's a lot of sanctions against her,
right?
And what about him?
Right.
Okay. So that's coming up. We're going to be discussing that. We're in the Gemara. We're in the middle of Pehei Amud Aleph. The Gemara asked the following question: Bamineh b'nei b'yirmir of sheshes shniel labavlo shniel liyavam. Okay. Fascinating question. Let's say that to her husband, she's a shnia. She's a secondary erva to her husband, which means that there's a rabbinic prohibition of her marrying her husband, and she did so anyway. And her husband dies. And now she's a candidate for Yibum. There's a brother, right, to her husband's brother. And she's not a shnia to that man. Remember yesterday we went over a scenario. I know it's strange, but I'll just go over the same scenario again. Right? He married, let's say, for example, his grandmother. Okay, lo aleinu, and who's a shnia? She's a secondary erva to him, and it's his maternal grandmother. And let's say his brother, who obviously they share the same father, but had a different mother, and so therefore to the brother, she is not related to the brother. So she is also to her husband through a shnia, an iser shnia, but she's mutter to a yavam. And now let's entertain the case where the husband dies. And now she's a candidate for Yibum. Good. All this we'd already discussed in the Mishnah. Here's the Gemara's question. Is she going to get a ksuva? She forfeited her ksuva from her husband from being involved in such a marriage. Okay. Good. But now her husband's dead. And now she slides over to the Yavam. Generally speaking, who's responsible for the ksuva in a Yibum scenario? Remember what we learned? We learned the first husband is the one, meaning obviously he's dead. We're obviously talking about his estate. But his estate is the party responsible for the ksuva of the woman.
The Yibum is the backup, though.
And then we also learn, very good, and we also learn that if the first husband doesn't have, so then she goes to the Yavam's estate is there going to be there to secure the ksuva. But over here, however, one can make the following argument, and the Gemara is about to do it. In this particular case, we don't shift the ksuva responsibility over to the Yavam. Why? Because she forfeited her ksuva. And maybe what the Gemara is about to argue is because she forfeited her ksuva from her original husband, she therefore will not get a ksuva from her yavam as well. This is what the Gemara is about to argue. So let's start again. On one hand, we generally say that the ksuva comes from the from the first husband, and here she doesn't have. On the other hand, we also learned previously that if she doesn't have a ksuva if there is no assets in the estate from the first, she will then collect from the second, or not collect, I should say, but rather the second husband's estate, her brother-in-law's estate, will be there to secure it. So isla. So maybe over here the same thing would be true. So amalei rav sheshes tenisua ksuva nechse bala rishon v'imaisa shni. So the Gemara says, we have a Braisa. The Braisa says it very clearly. In this particular case, she does not get a ksuva secured from her second husband, meaning the Yavam. Why not? Because she forfeited her ksuva. And a forfeiture of her ksuva will not allow her to then have a ksuva secured by a second husband. It is fascinating, meaning generally speaking... Correct. It's part of the kenas of her being involved in that first marriage. It is fascinating because, generally speaking, we know that there is a rabbinic prohibition for a woman to be with her, to be married without a ksuva. And now we have identified a case. It's a very bizarre case, admittedly, but we have identified a case now where a woman could, in fact, be married, is in fact married lawfully, but without a ksuva. I totally understood. It's a marriage, and it's a marriage without a ksuva. So, all right, it could just very well be that this is a unique circumstance. But yes.
Isn't any time a kohen marries a grusha or a kohen? Would that be awesome? They don't have a
kesuva. Oh, so what we're about to see later this morning, but more probably tomorrow, is that in that case there's not a forfeiture of kesuva. And why? And what's the difference? That's coming up in just a moment.
You mean the rabbis will actually sit and write a
kesuva
with
Hedy was asking me this question yesterday. Meaning who's getting involved in all these scenarios where the marriage is not sanctioned? Right, who's the sofer? Who's the rabbi? Who are the witnesses? Hedy asked me yesterday, is there a responsible adult in the room right now where all this is happening? So, unfortunately, all I can tell you is that there are irresponsible people out there, and it happens. Okay? I'd prefer not to say that, but it's just true. And not only is it true, but it's clear from all this discussion in the Gemara that it happens, even though it never should have happened. Okay. It could very well be, but again, unfortunately, we know cases like these happen. But right. Okay, good. I mean, not good, but just that's where it is. Michlal, sorry, I'm sorry. Michlal de'ika de'isla. Now, I should have, before I pause to make the general points, I should have read on further. Now, as Rashi points out right here, you can see Rashi inside, I'm just going to paraphrase, the Gemara is answer the question very clearly. Okay, it's very clear. Meaning that if a woman gets involved in a shnia marriage that she shouldn't have got married, so she forfeits her ksuva, and moreover, then if in the event she gets transferred over to a yavam that she is in fact allowed to marry, she still has forfeited her ksuva. That's very clear. But what the Gemara notes, however, is Mechlal Dika the Islam Yavam. So the Gemara says, but just the way the Braisa is phrased, the Braisa says, Afilu miyavam, even from the Yavam, sounds like in this case, but sounds like there's another case where she would be getting a ksufa from a Yavam. Chesuri Mechsav Achikton, the Gemara says, look, there's pieces missing from the Braisa, and let's fill in the missing gaps. Ksuvas al nechse bala rishon vi'i leithle mirishon takin le misheni. Ah, there we go. So generally speaking, a woman gets a ksufa from her first husband, and even as the Yavama being transferred over to her Yavam, the estate of her first husband is still there to secure the ksuva. If there is no estate, if the husband died penniless, so then the second husband, the Yavam, is going to provide her a ksuva. However, now we understand. But if she is a shnia to the first husband, meaning that she's rabbinically prohibited to the first husband, afilu miyavam ein la, then she won't even get from the Yavam. Oh, okay, good. Now we see the entire brisa, now we understand the language of afilu. Okay, ba mine Rabbi Elazar may Rabbi Yochanan Amalako and Gaza Grusha Vechalutz the Kohen Haji Yesh Lamazonos O Ein Lamazonos. Okay, if a Grusha marry, if a Kohen marries a Grusha, if a Kohen Gadol marries an Almana. By the way, Hedy, just to amplify your question, not because I want to, but simply because, you know, you're talking about who the responsible party is. I mean, we're talking about a Kohen marrying a Grusha. Okay, and unfortunately it happens, and it shouldn't, but it does. Can you imagine? We're also talking about a Kohen Gadol marrying an Almana. I understand it's theoretical, it's conceptual, we're discussing the halacha, but like, just even having the discussion, how strange it is that we are talking about the top Kohen, right? And he's marrying an Almana, the Torah prohibits? Like, it's, again, it's just, I understand, it's a strange discussion. So, right. Right. So, Yesh Lamazonos or Ein Lamazonos? Gemara's question is as follows. Is there Mazonos or is there no Mazonos? Now we know that she gets her ksuva for reasons we have not yet articulated, but we'll articulate them in a moment. But right now the Gemara wants to know, does she get support? She gets a ksuva, but does she get support? So the Gemara says, I don't even understand why you're even entertaining this question. Mizonos, do you know what Mizonos does? I mean, obviously it feeds her. But more than that. It keeps her in the marriage. Meaning, if she's going to get supported by her husband, if she's going to get dinner every night, she has no interest in leaving this situation. Although the Torah prohibits it, but at the same time, she doesn't have to worry about food. So, Gemara says, I cannot imagine that we're even entertaining the idea that a woman got involved in a marriage that the Torah prohibits, and she's entitled to mezonos. Chachamim wouldn't do that. So the Gemara says, okay, we're going to go back to the case which Rashi already described earlier, but let's say it now outside, and that is a case in which husband went away on a business trip, went away for a long time, she's now hungry, she wants to eat, she's going to borrow, and again, the question becomes, is the husband going to be responsible for that tab that she's accrued while he was away? Now the Gemara fields the question. Is Mizonos part of Tanai Ksuva? And we know she's entitled to Ksuva. Unlike the Shnia, who's not entitled to Ksuva, she forfeits the Ksuva. But here, the Grusha married to the Kohen does not forfeit the Ksuva, again, for reasons which we're going to articulate. So she doesn't forfeit her Ksuva. So maybe she too does not forfeit her Mizonos as well. On the other hand, we're going to make a very easy distinction. You know why she doesn't lose her Ksuva? Because the whole idea of Ksuva is that get out of this marriage. Right. Meaning you do not belong in this marriage, you get out of this marriage, and so therefore she doesn't lose her ksuva. Masha Enke, Mizonos is just the opposite. Mizonos is only going to encourage her to stay in this marriage. So maybe the Chachamim made a very simple distinction. Those payments that excuse her from the marriage and will motivate her to leave the marriage like ksuva, that stays intact. Mizonos, which is only going to encourage her to stay in the marriage, that the Chachamim did not afford her. Amarle, lace law. Answer is, she doesn't have Mizonos. Vehatanya Yeshla. Now there's a Braisa that says, Gemara just quotes a little snippet of the Braisa, that she is entitled, Kitanya Ilachamisa. No. That Braisa that says that she's entitled to Mizonos, that's talking about after the husband dies. We know part of the Tanai Ksuva is that in the event that she becomes a widow, the estate is responsible to keep supporting her until she remarries. Part of the ksuva. When the Braisa says that she's entitled to Mizonos, it doesn't mean Mizonos while they're alive and while they're married. It means Mizonos after he dies and she's a widow. Is Amar Amarle Tanya Yeshla Habe Amod Vehotzei Kai? So, just another version of the same basic discussion. The Braisa says that she's entitled to mezonos. The Gemara says, I don't understand. He's got to divorce her. Vela Tanya Yeshla. So, what are you going to do with the Braisa that says Yeshla? Kitanya Yelacher Misa. That Braisa is talking about Lacher Misa. Good.
Is it still a reason to keep her in the marriage? Because it maybe doesn't have the money.
I mean, the whole reason why the Chachamim were misaking Ksuva is so that he thinks once or twice before divorcing her.
Right, so that keeps her in the marriage.
Correct. But, again, he married her. It was a prohibition in the Torah. He married her anyway. He's obligated, meaning he wrote the Ksuva. He's obligated to give her that settlement. That.
Just like she doesn't get Mizono, she shouldn't get Ksuva for the same reason. Oh, I mean, they should go ahead.
Again, by the Shnia, that's absolutely correct. By Nisa Torah, She didn't lose her ksuva. And again, why not? I keep telling you it's coming. So can you do me the following favor? Come back tomorrow morning. Okay, tomorrow morning we start with a braisa, and the first thing we're going to be discussing tomorrow is what's the difference? Why by a shnia, a woman is involved in a marriage that's an issur derabanan, she forfeits everything. Mizonos, ksuva, blos, peros. And meanwhile, when a woman is involved in an issur deraisa, imagine a tzasa min haTorah, like grusha to kohen, like amana to kohen gadol, she doesn't forfeit a ksuva. What's the difference? So please come back tomorrow.